I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guest is Gene Peacock. He's the executive director of Zoo Boise. We're talking about how zoos can contribute to local issues of conservation. Peter, I'm super excited to talk about this. I bet you are too.
Yes. This is in my backyard, and this is going to be a wonderful conversation. And Zoo Boise really has been the trend center for this type of conservation. It's been fantastic what they've been doing.
We'll dig into that soon, but first, give us a little nature news.
A little bit of nature news. Leif, did you know that there are nearly 1,500 active volcanoes around the world, and there's a whole bunch of people that live next to these volcanoes?
Okay, 1,500 yes. Volcanoes and a lot of people.
People, and now, guess what? Volcanoes have a series of several hazards associated with them.
I can think of a few.
Yeah, yes. Like lava flows, volcanic projectiles, pyroclastic flows, debris flows, toxic gases, and volcanic ashes.
Volcanic ash, yeah.
So, you know, I think if you live next to one, you probably need to be aware of these potential hazards and kind of what you need to do as a precaution.
Sure.
So one of the first things that you should really do is get to know your local monitoring agencies. Volcanoes always give you warnings before they erupt.
That's right.
And being able to have these monitoring agents around you and your cities and the people are really important. Second thing you need to do is really have an emergency kit prepared for the whole family, including pets, if you have pets. Make sure you do that. And with that, you've got to have your first aid, food, water, a battery-powered radio, and, you know, you need to have eye protection and respiratory protection.
Right, ashes.
Ashes and some gases
stuff.
Are coming up. Yeah, yeah. If you are in the region when an eruption is happening, make sure you listen to those monitoring stations because they may be able to tell you it's okay if you stay or no, we need to evacuate. If you have to evacuate, make sure you also have a first aid kit in your vehicle. If you stay, make sure all your doors and windows and such are closed and you're not running any type of fans, air conditioning, or heaters or furnaces because that will bring in the ashes
That's
and
right.
the gases as well. And make sure you have plenty of water because you never know. If you've got a well system that uses electricity, that might go out and you might not have access to your water. So fill up your sinks and tubs and stuff with water in case that happens. And if you do stay and the eruption is done, again, make sure you listen to your local agencies to tell you if it's okay to go out or okay to return. Realize that there are still safety concerns if you do go outside or if you do return. So one of the big ones is if you're cleaning anything up, make sure you have a mask on for respiratory protection again, because you'll be churning up the dust and that could cause some severe respiratory problems.
There's your update on volcano hazard safety.
Yeah, that's my PSA for the day.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good. Do we have any local concerns?
You know, we've had several episodes on volcanoes, and my guess is if the Yellowstone hot plate decides to erupt, we might have more serious concerns than keeping our windows closed and air conditioning shut off.
Maybe our greater concern would be maybe something like Mount St. Helens or one of those neighboring volcanoes erupting and the ash column associated with that. That's maybe more likely, I suppose.
And you're right, because I can remember as a kid when Mount St. Helens first erupted and we were getting some ashes in northwest Iowa.
Yes, they do travel pretty far.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that. And hopefully not anytime soon.
Yeah.
We like it safe. But, you know, you got to be ready. Trivia time. So today we are talking about the intersection of zoos and conservation. And today we're lucky to speak to the director for Zoo Boise. So that informs the trivia question for today. As of 2020, how much has been donated to conservation from the Zoo Boise Conservation Fund? I think you'll be delightfully surprised. When we come back from the break, we're going to learn more about it.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org. Or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Well, I want to welcome Gene Peacock from Zoo Boise. Thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Now, we got to deal with the elephant in the room. Your name is Gene Peacock. You work at a zoo. Was this destiny?
I'd like to say yes, but I kind of fell into zoo work accidentally when I was in college back in the 80s. I grew up in North Carolina, hence coming about the accent, honestly. but I grew up doing outdoors and animals and being from the coast of North Carolina. Always loved the outdoors. And when I was in college, I had a great professor that was a mentor of mine and encouraged me to apply for a job at a small zoo in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I applied for it and got it. And that kind of was like 1988, something like that. And it's kind of been a whirlwind tour ever since. So the name works. It's a great opener. I get a lot of questions about it. But I kind of fell into zoo work accidentally.
Before we started this, I did ask Gene if you were ever a bird curator, but you weren't. You actually started with elephants.
I worked elephants and pachyderms most of my career as a keeper. But I started off at Greensboro, that small zoo. It's the Nature Science Center of Greensboro. It's a fabulous place. It's now an AZA, Association of Zoo Aquariums Institution. Back then, they were not. But it's a great place if you ever go visit it. But a lot of small zoos, keepers take care of a lot of different animals. So I actually started off, I worked in the farmyard. We had bears, we had jaguars, we had mountain lions, bison, llamas, we had reptiles, birds. So when I worked there, did a little bit of everything. And then I ended up at the Knoxville Zoo, and I worked as a great ape keeper. I worked with gorillas, chimps, orangs. We had a whole lot of red pandas and other primates there. And I ended up shifting into pachyderms, in particular elephants. And I just kind of fell in love with elephants and rhinos and did that for the majority of my career as a keeper. So a lot of elephant experience, a lot of rhino experience. If you come visit me at the Zoo Boise and you come in my office, people give me knickknacks of just things with elephants. And so I've got a lot of elephant stuff and a lot of rhino stuff. So, but I just like being around all the animals. It's a pretty cool job.
Gene, through all your travels, you've ended up in Zoo Boise. Can you mm-hmm. give us just a little bit of information about Zoo Boise and really why we've got you here today talking about that conservation fund?
So Zoo Boise, I have been the director at Zoo Boise now for a couple of years. Before that, I was director at a couple of other facilities, longest time in Delaware at the Brandywine Zoo. And Zoo Boise is one of about 230-some members of the Association of Zoo and Aquariums. And a big part of being accredited by the AZA is being involved in conservation. Zoo Boise kind of stands out for what we do for conservation and has really made an impact on what zoos do globally just by showing what a small zoo can do. That's one of the great things about Zoo Boise, and we've opened up a bunch of new exhibits in a whole new section last summer, and that's increased our visitation. And so the more people that come to the zoo, the more we're able to do for conservation.
So let's talk about that conservation fund. How do you generate money from that?
In 2007... my predecessor, Steve Burns, he's now at another zoo. But in 2007, Zoo Boise became the first zoo to, we like to say, make the act of visiting zoo a conservation action. So in 2007, Zoo Boise started the initiative where a portion of your admissions fee goes directly to conservation. Back when it initially started, it was 25 cents. Now, when you come into Zoo Boise, it's like $10, $11 to get in. 50 cents of your admission fee goes directly to conservation programs. So we generate money through that. So just literally by paying to come in the gate, you do that. If you buy a zoo membership, $5 of every zoo membership goes directly to the conservation fee. And then when you're in the zoo, a lot of the things you can do in the zoo, we use that as a vehicle. If you feed our giraffes, 100% of the money from our giraffe feeding goes to conservation. Our sloth bear feeding, 100% of that goes to conservation. We have a lot of quarters put in feed machines at our zoo farm, and every bit of that goes to conservation. We do in the summer when the canal in the middle of the zoo is full of water, we do a cruise. So all of that that's collected through those goes to conservation. And then recently when we embarked on our new Gorongosa expansion that opened up last summer, the Friends of Zoo Boise, which is our nonprofit board, they made a pledge that 10% of all construction costs on any zoo expansion has to be dedicated to conservation. So if we have a $7 million project, we have to raise $700,000 for conservation. So all of those vehicles go into helping fund our conservation fund.
That's fantastic. Now, you mentioned there Gorongosa Park. Can you tell us about that? I think some of our listeners may be familiar with that.
Yep. Gorongosa National Park is our primary conservation partner. At Zoo Boise, we have a mandate that 10% of our operating budget annually has to go to conservation. Out of that 10%, a big portion of that is to Gorongosa National Park. A native Idahoan, a gentleman named Greg Carr, started a project called the Gorongosa Restoration Project a little more than 10, 15 years ago. And he really got involved in Gorongosa's rebirth. Gorongosa is in Mozambique, Africa, which is at the very southern tip of Africa, down next to South Africa. And it was a Portuguese colony for a long time. Once it gained its independence, it was in a prolonged civil war. And as a result of that war, infrastructure was destroyed. And in particular, in the parks and in the habitat in Gorongosa, a lot of the wildlife was destroyed. So the Gorongosa Restoration Project is all about bringing the park back. And over the years, it runs the gamut of what's going on to help bring the park back. But the Gorongosa National Park has kind of become one of those model parks for other African parks to help bring the wildlife back, to reduce poaching, and to provide, more importantly, opportunities for everybody that lives in and around the park. And so Zoo Boise got involved in it about a decade ago, and then last year we worked with the Gorongosa Restoration Project and signed a long-term 15-year commitment to continue our work with Gorongosa.
So how do you work? I'm trying to make the connection between very geographically distanced, you know, places of
Idaho. It's a long way.
Yeah, I bet it is. That's a lot of flights.
It's a long way. We do several things. Number one, we make sure a percentage of our money that we raise goes to Gorongosa. It averages more than $200,000 a year that we send there. And $200,000 a year in Mozambique, it is one of the poorer countries of the world. So that goes a long way into accomplishing things they need to do. So early on in the Gorongosa project, Zoo Boise helped fund the rangers. They went from no rangers to, I think they have now, between 200 and 300 rangers. And Zoo Boise really was part of the catalyst to help fund and pay for these rangers. As the program's gone, we helped pay for collaring lions so they could monitor the lion population. And now the lion population has come back. Several years ago, they reintroduced zebras into the park. The Zoo Boise Conservation Fund literally paid for the actual zebras that were reintroduced into the park. More recently, they've returned wild dogs to the park, so we've helped and been involved in that. And it's not just the animal aspect. We have built hospitals and clinics in some of the villages in the town around the park. We have helped build schools. We're very involved now in the Gorongosa Girls Club project. Teenage girls that live in and around the park end up getting married at a very young age. So this girls' club project keeps them in school longer so they can have careers and better their education. So we've been actively involved in that. And then a big one is it's the Gorongosa Coffee Project. A big thing that's cut down on poaching is you give the people that live in and around the park a way to generate income. And so Greg, who I mentioned earlier, got involved with folks, and they decided to grow coffee on Mount Gorongosa, which is part of the park there. And so they grew coffee beans, and now the coffee is actually being harvested. And the beans are actually, after they're harvested, they're sent here to Boise, Idaho, And the beans are roasted here in Boise. And right now, I think you can buy them online, and you can actually buy the bags of the coffee here at the zoo. So 100% of the money from the bag of coffee, the Friends of Zoo Boise just fronted the money to pay for bags. And then we turn around and we sell it. It's like $15 or $20 a bag. All $15, $20 of that goes directly back to the coffee project that provides jobs and income for people around the park. And they're getting ready to expand that, and I think they're starting to grow cashew trees. And so it's all about creating industry to give people a chance to generate income, to have something to do, and it reduces poaching. It helps bring better education, better health care, and everything to Gorongosa. So that's actually how we're involved, and how our small zoo here in Boise, Idaho, and the people in Idaho have an impact on the other side of the world, you know, doing great work.
I think it's amazing when we look at conservation. And a lot of times we just want to focus in on the animal or the habitat, but not necessarily the community. And when you involve the community, that has such a greater impact, and the sustainability is going to be there. And the work that you guys do with the community is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, you've got to have buy-in from everybody. If you don't, it's not going to work. And it's taking that holistic approach where if you take care of the people, then they take care of the land, and that helps the wildlife come back. And it's just the best way to approach it. And it's a model now that there are a lot of other parks in Africa that are really using that same model.
So how do this conservation fund and this model apply itself closer to home?
The Friends of Zoo Boise, who manage the conservation fund, everybody's a firm believer that you also have to keep a part of it at home. One of the good things, though, being involved in Gorongosa, as I mentioned, it has very strong Idaho connections. So it is, Gorongosa Restoration Project's U.S. offices are based here in Idaho. The coffee's here. But we also believe in conservation locally. So when we decide each year what we're going to do, we always try to make sure we select local projects. And over the past decade, we've done all kinds of projects locally. But probably one of the most that's in the forefront right now, back in 2016, Table Rock and the Foothills, which are right outside of Boise, caught on fire. And so we have funded over the past several years the Friends of Zoo Boise. We gave initially $100,000 to help restore Table Rock, and then it was an additional 5 years we're going to do that. So over a six-year period, it's $350,000 we're giving to restore Table Rock, which is right here in our backyard. And part of that restoration is mitigating the invasive species and replanting it with natives. And that's going to help the population. Something else we do is we're involved in research and reintroduction in the wild. And Zoo Boise's been involved for a number of years, the Southern Idaho ground squirrels. So we actually have a facility on site off exhibit where we breed and raise ground squirrels. And then Idaho Fish and Game has certain facilities where they have released ground squirrels back into the wild where the species was disappearing. So that's just a couple of examples locally. But over the years, we've funded wolverine studies up in the Panhandle, done a lot of work with human-bear conflict and ways to make it safer for the bears and the humans. Everything to butterflies. I mean, you name it, we kind of look at that. So we believe in keeping it locally, too. We do quite a bit locally.
Again, Zoo Boise has been such a great inspiration for other facilities across the United States on conservation. And here in Pocatello, our zoo is an indigenous zoo. And so we have the ability to really, truly focus in on some state conservation projects. And it's also quite refreshing to see how much time and effort you guys are putting into not just conservation within the Boise area, but you're looking across all of the state of Idaho on these projects.
Right.
Sometimes it gets ignored because we forget that we do have plenty of concerns and issues within Idaho and the United States that need to be addressed.
There's a lot right here in our backyard, and a lot of people don't realize how much, I guess, open space and undeveloped space is actually in Idaho. I think it's one of the top two or three states of just wilderness, and so much of it is inaccessible. But with more and more people moving here, that does have an impact on wildlife and on habitat. So we've got to do our part. You know, you got to do it globally, but you got to do it locally.
How do you guys decide on the projects? Do the guests that come to Zoo Boise, do they get input on the types of conservation projects you guys might fund?
So there's a couple of ways we do it. We have some kind of long-standing projects, like you may want to, like Sciola. That's a very rare antelope found in the Annamite Mountains, which is along the Laos-Vietnam border. We have a great zoo team program here. We have about 160 teams that work throughout the year at the zoo. And one of the things they do is they get out and talk about the danger of snares and poaching, and they collect donations. And all of the money they collect goes to Sciola conservation. And that's something that the zoo team program decided on. But when you come in the zoo, if you remember, I said you get that 50 cent goes to conservation. Everybody that comes into the zoo gets a conservation token. And we have three wishing wells when you come in. And you can actually vote on which project you want your 50 cent to go to. And we change it up about every quarter. It may say, all right, you want your 50 cent to go to Foothills. You want your 50 cents to go to Gorongosa Girl Clubs. You want it to go to wild dogs, or it may be ground squirrels, giraffes, or whatever. We kind of switch that up. And then in the bigger picture with how we decide we give out the big amounts of money, we've got an amazing board with Friends of Zoo Boise. And so what we do, we have certain organizations that are long-term partners with that we give larger amounts of money, for example, Gorongosa. And then there's a great program through AZA, the Association of Zoo Aquariums, called AZA Safe. Zoo Boise was one of the founders to get that started up back in, let's say it was 2014, 15, something like that. So we give a large amount of money every year to that conservation fund, and it's money that goes to AZA that is not set aside. It's very similar to what we do with our conservation fund. It funds specific AZA-targeted safe species, and by safe, saving animals from extinction. And then we have our Foothills and our locals. So those are ones that we're giving to every year. And then we have certain organizations that we used in the past. We vetted them. We want to make sure that they have a connection with what our collection is, whether it's geographically or species. And then we also want to vet them to make sure that they have good connections with the zoological world. And once we have a list of those, we take those to our Friends of Zoo Boise board. And that's where our wonderful board members kind of decide on who they want to give the money to this year. And then we work out the amounts with what we have left after the ones that are our primary partners. And we give out grant, you know, these organizations. Last year, we did the Snow Leopard Trust. We did Wildlife SOS for sloth bears. An organization called New Nature, which is primate preservation in Southeast Asia. They all got like $5,000 to $10,000 grants. And then there's a really neat program called Bowling for Rhinos. We have an AZAC chapter, American Association of Zookeepers, and they do a bowling event and raise money for rhino conservation in Africa. We do all of those and think up all that stuff. But a big one to decide who gets the money and who gets the dollar amount. I got an amazing staff here with the Friends of Zoo Boise. So we put our heads together and we vet options, and then we present them to the Friends of Zoo Boise board, and they decide who they want to give it to.
Even just the $5,000 grant goes a long way. And Leif was kind of laughing at Bowling for Rhinos. You know, that's been around.
That's a great event.
I think since the 80s, you know, every keeper worth their salt has been to a Bowling for Rhinos event.
Yep.
And it's just, it's super fun for the whole entire zoo and community. And then if we go back to the SAFE program, the other great part about that is, you know, one of their first 10 animals was a whooping crane. And so even these AZA zoos are looking within the United States and North America for conservation programs too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've got North American turtles, North American songbirds in the SAFE program now. So you've got these species here in North America, in addition, you know, getting the spotlight, just like giraffes and lions and chimpanzees and gorillas. So they're really targeting a wide variety of species, and they're getting the big megafauna that people think of, but they're also getting a lot of the little stuff that sometimes gets overlooked. And I think I think it's a great approach.
It's amazing buy-in, too. When we talk about Gorongosa and the buy-in within the community, I think sometimes it's even harder here in the United States to get a community buy-in for conservation issues. And the wishing wells are great. I've sat there with my two daughters at Zoo Boys, and we've had to discuss what wishing well they're going to put their 50 cents into. We've never come to the same agreement, so at least there's three different options.
I've seen some heated debates on what to decide on down at Zoo Boise, but as you were saying, you know, we're really lucky in the community here has bought into what we do. It's helped us. We opened up a whole Gorongosa exhibit last year. We decided bringing a part of Gorongosa to the people of Idaho is important. We always talk about Gorongosa. We always plug Gorongosa, and we're always talking about how valuable it is there to preserve this area. So it's important to bring a piece of it here. And so when we opened up this new exhibit in July of last year, our attendance has exploded. We're up about 30-40%.
That's awesome.
And so the more people coming to the zoo, the more revenue it generates for conservation. When you add, you know, another 50,000 people, and that 50 cent of those 50,000 people, it adds up.
It adds up really quick, yeah.
It adds up quick, and it's really made people learn more about Gorongosa, but when they come and learn about Gorongosa, then they learn about things like I mentioned, Table Rock, and they're like, oh, we didn't realize you did that. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a great vehicle for the zoo. Plus, we actually take people to Gorongosa if you ever want to go.
Yeah. Real quick, Gene.
Didn't say it was free.
I know. But most of it's going towards conservation, right?
So, yeah. Well, it covers the cost of the trip, and it gets you to Gorongosa to see the work we do. We don't really make money off of – some zoos do trips, and they make money, and that's great because it's getting people to see it. We basically cover our costs because we think it's important to people to see Gorongosa, and it helps make those connections because, you know, working in zoos, it's all about the connections.
Yep.
And when you make those connections, it just expands your knowledge and expands your learning and your desire to do stuff.
That's fantastic. You know, I want to get back to our trivia question we started with, which relates very much to the Zoo Boise Conservation Fund. How much since 2020, how much has been donated to conservation through the Conservation Fund at Zoo Boise?
Well, so since the Conservation Fund started back in 2007, and they've been tracking those amounts, as of this year with what we've already done, we're right at about $3.1 million.
That's fantastic.
That averages about 10% of our operating budget annually.
And I think that's an amazing, wonderful goal for every zoo to work towards. 10% of operating budget goes towards conservation.
I think it's a great benchmark to go for. Some zoos, 10% may be a little high. Some zoos may be able to do more. But I think as long as zoos do their part and people realize that the role zoos play is to make those connections and to realize how valuable the role we play in conservation is, that's going to show how we're relevant today. And I think that's the most important thing.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more, Gene. And we want to thank you for joining us today. Yep. And if everyone out there wants to learn a little bit more about Zoo Boise's Conservation Fund, just please visit zooboise.org.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org. Or send email to noidkisu@isu.edu.